Basketball Manitoba podcast, we have Irfan Nisajpour. He is a graduate of Daniel McIntyre Collegiate, where he won a provincial championship and was ranked the number one player in the province. He went on to play on the provincial team for two summers. After graduation, he went on to play at the University of Winnipeg. There, he was second team All-Canadian two times, Canada West Rookie of the Year, Canada West first team All-Star three times, and Canada West second team All-Star once. With the Westmen, he finished his career first in points, third in rebounds, first in field goals made, first in assists, first in steals. He also played on the U18 Canadian national team, as well as the university national team. After college, he went on to play professionally in Iran for 10 years. During that time, he represented with the Iranian national team for two summers. He is now a personal trainer and nutrition coach, a TAC basketball program coordinator and head coach, and most recently, he and his wife launched B-Ballers Athletic Academy with a focus on teaching basketball to kids aged 2 to 10 in Richmond Hill, Ontario. Irfan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on, Darcy.
Well, we have you on, but for those who are only listening, we also have someone else on the podcast. So why don't you introduce our other guest?
Yeah, definitely. When you reached out to me, I wanted to also call my wife, Celine, to join us. So she's here with us to give some insight. You know, she knows me really well, and I thought it would really help with a different perspective. So Celine is here with us.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome, Selena. I think we were talking a little bit offline. I said, this is perfect because now you can tell us all the stuff that Irfan won't tell us about himself, right? how you're obviously married. I know you guys have some children, but how long have you known Irfan for?
Since 2014. So it's about 8 years.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. 9 years. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, I mean, this podcast is essentially about origin stories. Okay. So I'd be remiss if I didn't ask your origin story. You know, where did you meet? Was it, you know, tell us a brief story about that. Where'd you meet and how'd that take place?
We actually met on a basketball court because,
perfect.
I'm a pro athlete. I'm an ex-professional basketball player.
Okay.
Not as professional as him, obviously, but I used to play, and we met on a basketball court. We played, but we never talked there. And we both invited to a graduation party.
Okay.
It was a mutual friend, and then we both went there and we hanged out. And, you know, the next day he texted me on Instagram that he wants to see me. And I said, okay, let's have a coffee together. And then
Nice. From
there, we met for a few times, but he was very, very, very serious about the relationship. So I was like, whoa, you say, I want to talk to your mom. I was like, okay, we just spoke like a few times. How did you know that I'm the one?
I love it.
The moment I met her, I knew she was the one. You know,
that's awesome.
It was love at first sight, as they say.
Yeah.
It's a love and basketball story. You know, we met on a basketball court, but we met at a birthday party or a graduation party, and, you know, had to work my magic there.
Well, I mean, you know, I again, like I said, it's awesome to have you on the podcast. You talk about magic. So for those who don't know, like, Irfan and I are pretty much the same age. Okay. So I got to get tortured by this guy consistently. So through high school, and then after that in university, and it was just like constant torture. But in saying all of that, the one thing that I can say is, you know, I'm a basketball lover. And so, you know, it was always a mutual respect. You know, your abilities are just phenomenal. You know, getting quadruple doubles. And again, I read off your stats, and, you know, I went and looked. And for those who might be listening, maybe shout out to, like, you know, Kendall Palko, some of the old timers, they didn't have all those stats. They only had limited ones. So where I was coming from, respect to the old guys, but in saying that, like, again, Irfan, what do you list yourself as? 5'11"?
Yeah.
Generously, right?
Yeah.
And to see you that high in rebounds, is just a testament, shows how well-rounded your game was. And again, like I said, so my, you know, my first memories of you really were just of, you know, first time we're playing and just hearing about you and stuff. In grade 10, you were phenomenal. And then obviously competing against you. Like, I have so many memories of you just torching us, and our entire practice plans were like, okay, we gotta get the ball out of his hands. But it didn't really work because then you were just such a good passer. So then you would just set your teammates up. So suffice it to say, I have a lot of strong memories of you competing against you. But I say all that just to say, you know, those are some of my first memories of you, first things I think of. If I ask you, what are your first memories of basketball? What are the first things that come to mind?
Wow, going back.
How'd you get involved in the game? Like, who introduced you to it?
You know, when we moved from Iran, we went to Greece. I didn't know anything about basketball. I was maybe 6 years old, 7 years old, still didn't know anything about basketball. It was all soccer early on. But when we moved to Canada, I got introduced to basketball, and I was always around my brother, my older brother. You know, he was a big role model. He introduced me to the game, but he never actually played on a team before. He never played on a, structured basketball, organized basketball, yet he taught me how to play. And I think he instilled the love of the game for me, basically, because I saw the passion he had for the game when he was watching it on TV, and I got excited, and he kind of led the way for me. He showed me how Magic Johnson would play, and it's not just about scoring, how to distribute the ball. So I think I was unselfish early on, which helped me become a better point guard. A lot of kids these days, they think basketball is all about putting the ball in the hoop. It's so much more than that. Like you mentioned, I'm 5'10", and yet I was always one of the top rebounders in my team. It's because, I went after the ball. That has nothing to do with skill. That's all heart. And I think my brother was a big contributor to my success through his discipline, through martial arts, and various activities. But yeah, it was in Canada when I was 7 years old, and my brother who really introduced me to the game.
That's interesting. So when you were young and coming up, again, back when we were playing, there weren't that many opportunities for young kids. And nowadays, there's so many and younger and younger. So were you just pretty much playing pickup? When did you start playing your first organized basketball?
I lived, Ercom House downtown Elden Street. There was a school, Victoria Albert, where we had access to the gym on the weekends. And, the organizers there would set up some games. But organized basketball, maybe in junior high, I remember my first game, I was in grade 7 or grade 8. My first shot was right under the hoop, and I tried to copy Michael Jordan. I did this. The ball hit right under the rim, and it came and hit me right on the head. It was a fun experience, lots of great memories.
So you're coming up, and you had mentioned your brother, who is clearly a key mentor in introducing you to the game. So as you were coming up, who were some of those other mentors? Now again, you can go all the way to high school, whatever, but when you're still learning the game, you're still figuring it out, who are those mentors? Because at some point, basketball becomes what you just described. And then at some point, you're like, I'm pretty good at this. And or somebody tells you, hey, you should be going to play on this. So who are some of those mentors that showed you? And then when did you start to really take it more seriously and realize that you actually had some special skill?
Yeah, the mentors. I mean, it kept coming. It kept coming because there was always someone better than me. There was always someone older, more skilled. And I just wanted to have what they had. I was always chasing somebody, whether that was with my brother and his older friends, because my brother's 6 years older, 8 years older. So I was competing with older guys all the time, and I had to keep up, right? But it was gym teachers. I remember in elementary, it was Mr. Lorenzo. He gave me a scholarship to Legion Athletic Camp, I believe it was. And that really helped me. That was a great experience out there. And then in junior high, Mr. Hildebrand, I think he's retired. He was at Hugh John McDonald, like what a great, great inspiration he was, you know, great motivation. And, you know, he would say, attack the rim, go around the back and do a right-handed layup. And then same thing on the left side, I'll buy you a Slurpee. So we spent a lot of time practicing that to get a free Slurpee. And then throughout high school, I mean, you remember Glenn Manlig, my teammate, but a year older. Mm-hmm. And I saw the passion he had for defense and winning. And I wanted to, you know, be at his level. Isaac Ansah, your teammate at Glen Lawn. You know, I see these guys, Alden and Kevin Yoboa, great inspiration. But I had one friend, Solomon. He was living in our building. And, you know, he saw that I was comparing myself to other players. And he said, you know what, Irv, don't compare yourself because you're going to have a different path. They're not going to get the same opportunities as you do. So just keep going and don't worry about who's better, who's worse. Just keep doing what you're doing. And I think that was great advice. People in my building I live with, there were so many mentors. I mean, throughout high school, Mr. Kelch, Greg Bouchard, mm-hmm. you know, Jason Papone.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, so many great inspirational guys. Kerry Lasuk, so many guys that supported me. And I'm so grateful to be coming from Manitoba and representing and connecting with you now and talking about the past. Yeah, great inspirational leaders I had in my life, definitely.
Yeah, it's I think that's the one thing that seems to be a consistent pretty much in everyone that I've ever interviewed. And I got to interview some pretty cool people is they have always said that there is people there that kind of just were there supporting them, guiding them. And again, I think that's, you know, that speaks to community, right? And that speaks to how important that is, you know. And again, we're not just talking basketball in this case, we are, but just generally speaking. And I think, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Irfan, like, I think you might be even speaking bigger than basketball here. When some of these people you're talking about role models, you know, they probably helped you out outside of the court as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. And that's huge. Yeah. That's just massive.
They cared more than just basketball. They saw me as a human, you know. Education, you know, getting to school, making sure I do my work so I graduate, you know, they wanted to see me succeed. Yeah. And I'm so grateful for those mm-hmm. people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, okay. So, you know, we kind of asked you about mentors, you know, I remember the first time I heard about you, it was in the 10th grade. But when did you, or when do you remember when you actually were playing and you are like, oh, I'm good. Like, I'm actually a good player. And you started to take it seriously. Cause we all have that point where it's like, you start to do something and you know, you're like, okay, I'm doing this. But then you start to realize that like, you're better than other people and you're looking around, okay, I'm pretty good at this. And then other people are kind of like telling you, oh yeah, you're pretty good at this. So yeah. What was that age for you where that kind of flipped and you're like, okay, no, I'm doing this. Like, this is something I'm good at this. I have a skill.
Yeah. 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 They say it takes about a decade for you to really almost master your craft and, you know, become really elite.
True.
It was the summers of grade 8, grade 9, where I would go to the YMCA every single day. I wouldn't miss a day, no matter what.
Are we talking downtown or?
Downtown YMCA.
Yes, of course. Of course.
And
yes.
I wouldn't miss a day. And there was older guys like Sook Singh, right? Yep. Like the older guys who would play NCAA, Sherwin and all these guys who I wanted to compete against and be where they're at because they were in university.
Yep.
And I was just in grade 8, grade 9, but I wouldn't miss a day, every single day, 5 hours. I was in there just playing pickup and I learned a lot from these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came to high school, grade 10, at Daniel Mack, we went undefeated. 42 games, 42 wins, zero losses, provincial championship. And then I think that's when, you know, I started taking basketball seriously because, you know, early on I fell in love with soccer, played on the Manitoba table tennis team. I liked table tennis even more than basketball at that time. But I think it was late junior high, grade 9, grade 10, I started to think, hey, you know, maybe I can do something with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So it was right around that time when I started, like, people were starting to talk about you a little bit because if we fast forward now a couple of years, correct me if I'm wrong here, I think this is your grade 11 year and you guys win the provincial championship that year. Mm-hmm. And that team was a special team, man. Like you guys, you know, again, this is my, like, this is the same era here, right? So I remember all these teams, but what do you remember about that year?
Oh man, that was a phenomenal year because of the togetherness, the trust that the coaches at DMCI, they really built that camaraderie. You know, the chemistry that we had where we would wake up before school and get in the gym and work on our individual skills. Mm. At lunchtime, we were in the gym playing pickup. After school, we would be practicing, spending time together out of school. You know, that chemistry was really there with Glenn, with Dwight, with Ajit and all these guys, Marvin Tapascio. Mm-hmm. I mean, what great characters and what great teammates I had. You know, I felt really supported there. And, you know, I think that was a really great team. I think sometimes I say that team, that grade 11 team, could have beat some of my Westman teams that I was playing on. You know, that high school team was really
special. You guys were good. You guys were a good squad. Well, it's funny. I actually skipped over this. And when you were talking about everything, I was like, wait, you just talked about the YMCA. And every time I have to rewind here, because every time someone talks about the downtown Y, it's during a certain era, right? Like that doesn't really exist anymore. And again, I've had this conversation many a times with many people, how there used to be, and again, there's pros and cons to organized basketball, right? The con is a lot of organized basketball means there's no unorganized basketball. And that was a special, special thing, because the amount of people that have told your exact story, I was way younger and I got to be in the gym with these like fully grown adults or teenagers or whatever, elite players. And I'm looking at them. And nowadays, again, you don't tend to see that because the kids play on teams and they don't get to like be in the same gym or even get on the same floor with people that are pushing them. So there's the pros and there's the cons, but I mean, that era is very special. And I think a lot of people talk about that. And I think the era before that was Bison East, right? You hear about the older guys talking about Bison East. Everyone used to go to Bison East. And then a little bit later, it was the downtown Y. And again, as far as I know, that doesn't exist anymore, at least in Winnipeg. I can't speak for other places, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those older guys, really, I mean, you got to get your in a while. And that's how you learn, right? You got to get your thrown to the ground and, you know, dominated, and that's how you know, build some fuel and anger and motivation to become better. But there's pros and cons.
So anyway, sorry, let's get back to this. You won the provincial championship grade 11. You mentioned some of the players. Okay, do you remember who you played against? Because I don't. I remember who you played against in the 12th grade. I don't remember the 11th grade.
Grade 11, it was Kelvin. It was Kelvin. Yes. The Clippers with Kevin and Elvis and Tim McDowell. They were like the monster Space Jam, right?
That was a good team.
Big and we were small, but
yes.
But I think we had more heart, and I think we had that chemistry.
Yep.
And great leader. Great leaders from the coaching staff. Everyone believed, and it was a memory that will last a lifetime.
For sure. It's funny. Okay. Now that you bring it all up, I'm like, we lost to them in the final four. We would have played you guys. I'm like, who'd you guys play against? We lost in the final four. Yeah. So it would have been us that played you guys. Unfortunately, I guess, or fortunately, I'm not quite sure. I don't know, but okay. So, I mean, now we fast forward a year, you had another good team and you guys went to the title again. Now this was, and I want to know what you remember from this, because you didn't win it.
No,
but it was an absolute upset on the other end. And I don't think anybody, you know, at some point I'm going to get to interview Dean Favoni, who was the coach of Dakota. And he's going to tell me all about it from his perspective, but I was watching in the stands and I'm telling you right now, like it was an absolute shock of a game. So I have what I was saying is, so yeah, I was sitting in the stands during there and it was an absolute upset, but so clearly not like a memory of a win, but do you remember anything from that game?
Oh man. Oh, of course I remember. Of course I remember, because, you know, you win in grade 10, provincial championship, grade 11, another provincial championship. And this would be a three-peat.
Mm-hmm.
I was, we were in the final and it was Dakota. It was Dakota. And, you know, it's going back and forth. They're playing great. Their big men are dominating our big guys. You know, they had AJ, he was what, 6'9"?
How tall is he? Maybe bigger. He may have been like 6'11". Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was huge.
He was big and you know, he's backing guys down. They were dominating down low. But, you know, we kept up. And then fourth quarter comes. We're up 5 points. And with, you know, I think it was 7, 8 minutes to go, I'm running back on defense. I stepped on my teammate's foot.
Yep. Paul, remember that.
Villanoza. And, you know, that really hurt. And I had to be sidelined. I tried to come back in, but I couldn't move. And unfortunately, we lost that last high school game of mine. And it was upsetting. But at the same time, that's life. That's what I try to teach the kids we coach now is you're not going to win every game.
Mm.
You know, I see kids nowadays, they lose a game. They're crying. They're upset. And this translates to life. Some days you're going to have a good day. Some days you're not going to have a good day. Mm-hmm. But you got to keep moving forward. You just got to think about the next step. What are you going to do? Kobe Bryant loses a NBA championship. He doesn't sit there crying. He's working on his free throws right after the NBA championship, focusing on the next year. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was sad to lose, but at the same time, I knew there was going to be more opportunities. Mm-hmm. So I had to get better and take my health more seriously and make sure my joints are strong so it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, if it's funny, when you bring that up, it made me think of something I've heard before is, you know, when people are worried about like losing a game and like a single, like a match, you know, they're not understanding that the game, like you had mentioned, is life. So like, if you're thinking you lost that game and that's a big deal, then you are losing the game. Right? Because there's a bigger picture, and the bigger picture is the game, right? Whether it's a whole season, a team, your personal development, whatever that thing is. Right. And I think that's kind of essentially what you're saying.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Basketball is so much more than a game. It teaches you lessons about life.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful thing about it. I mean, you get to socialize, you communicate with other people after COVID. You know, I'm sure a lot of people are struggling mentally. You know, this is a beautiful sport that teaches so much more than just running up and down and throwing a ball in a hoop.
Yeah,
it's truly teaches life lessons.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's well said. So, you finished your last year, rolled ankle, you're all done. You end up going to play at UW. Okay. So again, I know times were different back then. Recruitment was a little different. Mm-hmm. When did you like commit to them? Cause I feel for some reason, like you committed pretty early to them, but again, I'm a little bit foggy there. So walk us through kind of why you decided to go to UW and not U of M. And like, what were the other options on the table at the time for you?
Yeah, there was after graduating high school, I mean, I barely graduated. I was a poor student. Didn't really focus on my studies. But again, because of the support I had with the coaches and the teachers, they wanted me to succeed. They wanted me to play at the next level, not waste my talents and my skills.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there was University of Brandon. They came and took us out, my mom and my sister. They took us out to Brandon to see the facility. You know, they were interested. University of Regina. There was a few schools that were offering a scholarship, but I think it was a couple of the players, I think it was Alden and Kevin, who called me because I was about to commit to Brandon. But they called me and they said, you know, we're looking forward to you joining us. And, you know, growing up in downtown Winnipeg with University of Winnipeg, like my next door neighbor, basically, it only made sense. You know, why leave my hometown? So I committed to UW and
Was interesting. Yeah, that's it makes sense. And I'm trying to think who else I interviewed. They pretty much said the exact same thing.
Really?
But it was something about, I forget who it was, but it is something about when you grow up, you know, you're at Daniel. It's like you said, it's right down the street practically. That's, you know, that's your neighborhood. And you're like, well, I can play in my neighborhood and have my friends and family like just like right there. That's big, you know, and that goes a long way, man. And again, University of Winnipeg is for some people, it's some people are like, I don't know, it's this. And the same reason that there's other people like don't like it is the same reason why some people say, you know what, this is exactly where I want to be. you know? Mm-hmm. And obviously you fit in right there. Perfect. Right. Like you were a perfect representation of the Westman during that time. And just the community that, that the university sits in. It was like, it was literally perfect. Right. For like just your background, being an immigrant, just everything, man. Like it was, and then obviously style of play and all that stuff. It was again, like I said, I can sit here and like, we're trying to compete against you, but I was jealous, man. Like I wanted to play at West. I'm not lying. You know, I told Coach Crook that before. I'm like, man, like, you know, I would have loved to play. Like, you know, I would have just loved to sit there. You would have just been setting me up and I would have just been wide open. And like the fans, the Duckworth Center is still the best gym in the city without question. And it was always bumping and during your games. Right. So it was a special time when you were there.
Yeah, it was a great experience. Yeah, talking about Coach Crook and the UAW, your hometown, and yeah, special.
Yeah, it's special. And I mentioned those stats like we were reading them off at the beginning of the podcast. Now,
I didn't know about these stats.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a website. Yeah, there's a website. I'll send it to you after you want. There's a website where this person went and they like just started collecting all the stats. You can look at like career records. You can look about how you stack up against other people in the entire, you know, I guess it's called U-Sport now, but back in the day, CIS. Mm-hmm. And you can look at the team stats and all that. So they only goes back so far. I think the oldest person on the Westman list was Jeff Foreman, I think. But again, this, so it's more recent. I think it's everything after like, you know, we're talking 1990 type thing. But even with that, you still would have been up there in pretty much all of those stats. Like, I mean, you played the full career and you played a lot, for, you know, the difference between you and someone on the steals list, is about 350 steals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You're not surprised, man. Come on. You average like three, four steals a game.
Yeah.
You were a thief, man. The one move, I gotta bring this up just cause I'm having all these like flashbacks now. It's like, the one thing that you never, let me, I'll prep it and see if the answer is going to be the same. What's the one thing when someone's bringing the ball up against you that they do not do if they don't want to get the ball stolen? What should they not do? The one move.
Yeah. Don't spin on me.
Don't spin.
Don't bring it back and spit on me. If you're going to be going this way, I'm going all
the amount of times, man. And it's like, don't spin. It's just like, the best, cause you would bait people, but it was just like, just dribble straight. And like, you wanted them to like, kind of like, and then you would just pick people, man. It was like, it was an art form to say the least.
I remember we had a game. I was with the Manitoba team. We were playing against Quebec, and Garth McAlpine was one of the coaches as well as Kirby Shep. And it was the first half, and I think I had like 11 steals. And Garth McAlpine said, "Irf, just stop stealing the ball. Save it for the end if we really need it. But just stop stealing the ball. It was just getting boring."
Oh man, that's too good. Yeah, that was it. It was interesting is because you had this special ability to it's like tracking, like you have a very high tracking ability, right? So why you were able to go like track down rebounds, you're like obviously the effort and the willingness to do it, but it's the same thing with the steals. You have a natural ability to like Dennis Rodman would talk about this when he'd rebound, right? Like you can sense there's like a rhythm to it, and you can like, and you know, that was something that you always did. And it showed in the steals, right? Because you're able to like almost time the person. It's like, boom, you know.
That, and I think the hand-eye coordination that I developed playing table tennis, you know, reaction time, all these contributed to, you know, reading people basically, setting them up and then just reading it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like I said, I've always been a big fan of your game. I remember, I'm just going to go on a little tangent here. I remember this is like you've been playing pro already. And I think maybe, you know, you're over 5 years playing and you know, you come back sometimes and you came back and played, and it was in, I don't know if it was in a fundraising tournament or something, but it was, I don't know what it was. And it was at UW, and this is the first time. Now this is a much more common move, but at the time it was the first time I seen it do it. Seen someone do it. And I've seen a few people do it since this time. But so I'm curious, I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to know if you got it from someone else. But so you essentially are like, say you're on 45, you know, you're like on the 3-point line on the top. Mm-hmm. And instead of taking any sort of attack dribble at the basket, you essentially went and sprinted to the 45, like with the ball, like pushed out and just got to a free spot to shoot a three. Right. Yeah. So it was like, instead of like stepping back to create space, instead of like, you know, driving or doing some sort of other move to create space, you essentially use your quickness and speed and just sped dribble to a spot with like maybe one or two dribbles. and like sprinted there. You almost threw the ball out, right? Guys in front of you, and you just went that way because, you know, the angle's this way, right? So if you can, he's not going to be able to cut you off that way. It was the first time I ever seen someone sprint to a spot in the 3-point line and then just with the ball and turn and shoot. So do you remember that? Was that a move you used and did you get it from someone?
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about speed is you can get to any spot quicker than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing, your coach at Glenlawn, Manoj, how do you pronounce his name? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Manoj, yeah.
Yeah. I remember we were playing pickup at Glenlawn sometimes, and he said, Cam Hornby, he brought up Cam Hornby, and he said, notice how he jumps on a dime and gets up on his shot. So he kind of tweaked my jump shot a bit with that. And if I can use my speed, I'm just going to throw the ball out to where somewhere is, someone is not, and just rise up and shoot the ball. If I'm faster than everyone else and I get up quicker than everyone else, who's going to stop that?
Yeah.
But that's a good move to have in your arsenal.
For sure. For sure. And I definitely see some people have that now. It's like becoming more of a move that people do more regularly. They just get to a spot, right? In any case, a little bit of a tangent, but you finish up your years with the West Bin, all-time leader in a bunch of stuff. I already said you're all-Canadian 2 times. You're Canada's Rookie of the Year. You're a conference all-star, all that. Now, at what point, you're finishing up, did you know at all, I should say, that you were going to go play pro?
Pray to the stars I would go play pro. When I was in grade 9, when I really started falling in love with the game, going to the Y and, watching Michael Jordan's career after he won his 6th championship with the Bulls. I would look at the stars in my immigrant refugee building and, see some bright stars and pray that I would play pro. So I was kind of visualizing it and seeing it before it even happened. And then with the hard work, the support, the community, I think it all, the stars were aligned.
Mm.
Yeah.
So then how did it actually happen? All right. You finished playing.
Yeah.
You're all done. Like, did you get an agent? Did somebody...
After college.
Yeah. So how did you actually transition now? Like what did that look like? So you wanted to do it. Now you're getting the opportunity. Did someone mention it to you? When you were finishing in your 5th year, did you actually already know you were going to play? Like, just walk us through kind of how that all happened.
Yeah, I didn't know it was going to happen, but playing with the Canadian team, with the university team, Team Canada, we went out to Izmir, Turkey to play in the world championship, I don't know, whatever it was called at that time. And then there were teams from all over the world. And Team Iran actually had a team out there. Mm-hmm. And we put a friendly game with them before the tournament started. And I met the coaches and they noticed I'm Iranian. So I started talking to them. They said, yeah, there's opportunities out here for you. And that got me thinking. Also, when we were with Team Canada, they put us in the classroom. They said, hey, if you guys have a second passport, you have a great opportunity to play. And I kind of put 2 and 2 together. And my last year, I think Coach Crook, which was another great leader in my life, because after my first year of basketball, I remember I failed every class. I was on probation. I couldn't play basketball. But he kept me in the gym. He kept me involved. Grateful for him as well. An agent reached out to Coach Crook, and they were asking about me. So that got the talking back and forth, and that kind of got me out there. And people always ask, Irf, do you think you could have played in the NBA? Anything's possible. I know I'm not the biggest person in the world. I'm not the tallest guy. I can't jump the highest. I'm not the strongest guy. It might have happened. I've had some. I believe I could have played, because I played against Darren Williams and Chris Paul. I played against these guys when they were with Team USA. It's not too far off. I know I could have competed with these guys, but everything happens for a reason. And I believe me going back to my home country gave me culture. You know, growing up in Canada, there's no culture. The TV is your culture. The TV is your religion. You know, you don't really know who you are. So I think that basketball took me back to my homeland, gave me culture. And more importantly, that's where I met my wife and we have this beautiful family. So it was a blessing. You could have said I could have played in the NBA, whatever. It doesn't matter. Maybe I could have, but I think this was my path. I'm super grateful for this path that it took me on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's wonderfully said. I love that. So now I got to ask the question. I mean, you know, I asked how you guys met, right? But what year, like how long had you been there before you two met?
I think it was 2000. What year did we meet?
2014.
So 14. Yeah, halfway through my career there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a special, like you said, it's like you've come full circle almost, right? Like you went back home first and you like started maybe like relearn or be, you know, introduced again to your culture. And now, you know, you find someone out there and you get married and you have kids and it's interesting because like now you've kind of come full circle. Now you're in Canada again, but it's this weird kind of like circular story where, I mean, you know, I mentioned a few times, like you come here, you're an immigrant, right? You're playing, you mentioned the culture of Canada, TV, all that. So I'll just ask you straight up, like, you know, you've already kind of hinted how important it is for you, but what is it like? And again, this is more of a personal question, but raising kids, right? I mean, you know, you're raising Canadian kids, but you also have that background of being Iranian. So, you know, can you talk a little bit about that? Yeah.
I think no matter where you raise your kids, we decided to raise them here. And I think it was a good decision because of obviously with all that's going on in Iran and you know, the corruption that happens in many places, not just Iran. You talk about Nigeria, you talk about North Korea, it doesn't matter. But instilling good culture, like knowing where your parents are from, you know, practicing what your parents and grandparents practice. I think that's really important because living in Canada and USA, I don't think there's much of that. You know, I think what people see on TV, that's what they believe because the media controls a lot. And I don't want to get into that, but I think we do a pretty good job of instilling, you know, not just culture, but you know, discipline in our own way. I'm not saying we beat our kids and I don't encourage anyone to do that, but you know culture is really important. You know, knowing where you're from, it's really changed my life. And I think her influence on me has made me a better person. You know, they say with every successful man there's a successful woman behind that man, and you know, it's been a blessing to be in her life, because she's taught me a lot, has made me mature, you know, to act like a man and not a little boy, even though I still goof around a lot. And I, you know, but yeah, so blessed and so happy to be in this relationship. And I hope it carries on for another 150 years.
And so you have some little ones. Now I mentioned in the intro, appropriately, I guess you guys are starting a program for little ones as well. So I guess two questions. One, obviously both basketball background. I'm sure the little ones are going to probably play a lot of different sports or exposed to different things, but talk about maybe their involvement in basketball. How are you treating that? Are you letting them do whatever they want? Or are you introducing them to it? And then maybe talk a little bit about the program that you're starting up as well.
Yeah. You want to take that?
Yeah, our daughter, we have two girls. Erlene is 5 years old and the other one 18 months. So the young one is too early to introduce her to the basketball, but in this facility because we're starting at the age of 18 months. Maybe she's gonna start that, the young one's gonna start that too. My five-year-old, she's very active. She's very athletic. She likes basketball. She plays basketball. She plays gymnastics. She plays ice skating. She's really active. And right now, she's showing us some interest in basketball, which I think it's in her blood.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say she's like her mother, because I was always like, I was like boys at a certain point. Because I was playing basketball, I was always playing with boys, and I was like, it was something in me. I was very competitive. I didn't want to lose.
Mm-hmm.
She has that in her, and she got it probably from her dad and her mom. Yeah. So the conversation is like very much in her right now. And but we're not encouraging her to play basketball only. We obviously want her to be exposed to many activities, and then maybe she's gonna decide which one she likes, which one she enjoys, because our focus right now is in this new facility is that when their motor skill, I mean the brain and their muscles are gonna
fire and connect.
Mm-hmm. This is gonna take them to the next level. So whatever sport they play, they can do it. Just like Irfan said, Irfan was playing volleyball,
soccer, table tennis,
everything. Mm-hmm. And it was his choice to pick whatever he liked, whatever he did. That's where he picked basketball, and he was very good at it. So right now we're focusing on their motor skill, like fine motor skill, gross motor skill, so that they can. We introduce them to sports, but it's their option to go out there maybe at 8, 9, 10 years old to decide which one is good for them and which one they enjoy more. And that's where passion kicks in, and they can, decide better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just being athletic, being have that hunger to compete against other people. And definitely as a parent, I definitely focus on something in a group. I know I want my daughter to play, ice skating or tennis or whatever, but she has to communicate with other people. She has to learn how to share. She has to understand, community and team playing and teamwork.
Fair play.
She has to learn all that. So that's why we always encourage put them in one individual game and one maybe group game, like team games, team sports, so they can enjoy their lives. Because if you don't communicate with people, there's not much.
100%. I totally get it. I think I've seen similar programs like that, and like I said, if you can teach them how to move and how to run and how to walk and how to catch and all that stuff, and you're essentially, like you said earlier, it's like basketball can teach you so much about life, but just moving through the world and playing sports generally will teach you so much about life. Working with people, as you said, right? Yeah. Communicating and like sharing, all those are vital skills to actually work in the world and just be around other people, right? And sport can teach us that. Mm-hmm. Basketball can teach us that,
Yes.
Yeah. It's absolutely.
It's a beautiful sport.
Yeah. No, I love it. Okay. I have a few last questions here for you. Okay. Pretty much, you may have mentioned it already, but if you haven't, then the question goes is, what's your most memorable basketball moment or story?
Ooh.
And if you've mentioned it already, just find your second most, I guess, right? Because you've mentioned, we've talked about a lot of stuff and you've brought up some pretty significant things. But, and again, I always tell people this doesn't have to be basketball. Like, it can be outside of basketball, but it's related to basketball. Someone maybe you knew from basketball. It could be something that happened on the bus, a conversation you had with a coach, or special moment.
I think it was the lead up to going back to where I was born, and meeting my wife, because that really changed me as a person. It led me to care for myself, learn about how the body works, how the mind works, how to take care of myself, be more aware of how I eat, how I treat myself. And that all started when I went to play pro, when I had time and space to read and educate myself. And yeah, I think that was the most memorable is, you know, winning championships and, you know, leading in these statistical categories were all great, but where it led me to, that's the most memorable because that's the most impact it had on me now. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah,
absolutely. Well said. Well said. All right. So we always like to wrap up the podcast with a piece of advice. Now, we've been speaking now for a while and you've offered tons of advice, but there is a way I like to kind of frame this question. So imagine you're now speaking, we'll take you back to Manitoba. Okay. It's a provincial team day and all the provincial teams are there, all the ages, boys, girls. And they're like, we have a guest speaker today, Irfan Asajpour, former provincial team member, played at University of Winnipeg, played 10 years pro, played the national team. He's now a coach, all this stuff. And you're standing up in front of all these kids, all these youth. And there's one thing that you want them to walk out of that conversation understanding. Just one, right? Like there's this one idea, right? Or one concept that when they walk out of there, they're like, oh yeah, this guy Irfan talked. And I remember this, that he said this one thing. So mm-hmm. what would that idea, concept, or lesson be that you'd want those kids to walk out of there? Understanding about basketball and life, I guess.
That's a great question. Wow. One piece of advice. Do you have anything before I say anything? What would you tell them?
They want to hear it from the start.
Oh, they want
to hear it. The wife of the star.
You're a star, Isaac.
There you go. See, that's why he asked you. He's like, what do you think?
One thing I want to add,
please.
Irfan, I'm not saying it because he's my husband, but when I see him right now, he's coaching on Saturdays. We coach from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Wow.
And his passion for teaching, for mentoring kids, from the kids as young as 4 years all the way to 18, 19 years, he doesn't want to stop. Like his voice, he can't talk for a few days after Saturday because it's a very long hour for him to coach. Yeah. I hired like two other coaches, like kids, and one of them is my friend. She came from back home. Now, right now, they're helping out for him to just rest for a little bit, not to yell. And to, you know, coach people like that.
Yeah.
I want him to just calm down and just take it easy a little bit. But his passion for coaching and for, you know, saying the stuff that he wants to say, I think it's all there. He wants to say it and he doesn't want to stop. And no one else I saw in my entire life, I had so many coaches, no one can coach people like him because he loves the game. He knows in and out of the game and he is limitless. He doesn't want to stop. He just goes boom, 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 boom. And then the next class comes like boom, 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 boom. Like,
I love it.
Drink something.
I love it.
I loves it. And one thing he's very lucky is that he found his passion. A lot of people, they don't find what they actually enjoy and what they really like to do for their life, but he found that and he's doing a great job. And here it is now. Give us some advice.
I was just gonna say, I was saying you may have said it. You're sitting there, you're like, you're telling the kids, you're like, look, find your passion, because if you do that, you go out and find your passion, and if basketball is your passion, chase it. If something else is, go ahead, chase it, because you know you're always gonna have energy and enthusiasm and desire, right? To learn more. That's a great piece of advice. So I'm super happy you shared that, because Irfan, you wouldn't have said that about yourself. So thank you.
Yes. But
do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah. I mean, in order to be successful in basketball or anything you want to do in life, what sets you apart? What's going to make you different from the person beside you? If you come and practice with us once a week, twice a week, and the person beside you does the same thing, what's the difference there, right? Mm-hmm. What's going to set you apart? So I think passion is huge. So I say this to the kids all the time. The basketball was like my girlfriend. It was my best friend. It was my pillow. Mm-hmm. I took it to school. I took it to the store with me. You know, it was always in my hands. So you got to have passion. You got to enjoy mm-hmm. it. You got to love it. And if you don't, that's okay. Maybe your passion is something else. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. How's your energy? You know, I always talk about nutrition because I'm very passionate about that, because that's going to give you the energy you need, or it's going to bring you down. I remember when I was playing in university, you know, I had no knowledge about nutrition, and my pre-practice meal or snack was always like a pizza or like a Snickers bar. And I remember this, I would always go to practice with a headache. You know, what's wrong with just having an apple, you know, mm-hmm. something more natural. So nutrition is huge. You know, I think LeBron James, after he had a cramp in the finals a few years back with Miami, mm-hmm. he immediately went and got a nutritionist, a chef. He invested in his body because that is powerful. That's why he's who he is now, right? Yeah. If you want a long career, you got to take care of yourself. Next is sleep. You know, I remember I would stay up late watching basketball videos, thinking the more I put in, you know, the better I'm going to play. But if you lack sleep, you can't focus. You can't react on time. Mm-hmm. If you don't sleep, you know, if you don't have quality sleep, and everyone's sleep is different. I'm not saying 8 hours is the number to hit for everyone. Everyone's different. But, you know, if you're constantly sleeping late, you're not going to have the proper energy. You're mm-hmm. not going to have the proper mood. You're not going to be focused. So mm-hmm. nutrition, sleep, and then mindset, you know. Mm-hmm. A big one with mindset is, you know, you have all these physical skills of dribbling, shooting, and passing. But what about the mindset? You know, what about confidence? You know, I think that's huge. You know, sometimes you just got to trust in your game and just play without thinking too much. Trust that you've put in the work, you put on your jersey, now you're Superman, and you're untouchable. You're the best. Just go out there and play, you know? So having all these factors as an athlete is going to set you apart, not just the physical. Are you sleeping well? Are you eating well consistently? You know, do you have the proper mindset? And that's what's going to set you apart. Now, it's not just one aspect. It's the whole athlete. Mm-hmm. And that would be my advice for young kids today.
Mm-hmm. I love it. So like the holistic approach to it all, right? Mind, body, and you didn't mention soul or essence, but that's kind of like confidence, right? So it's that full.
Yeah.
No, I love that. It's a great way to wrap. I mean, you gave us tons of advice, and we went on a few different tangents, which I love, because we were able to kind of like talk about some other topics outside of directly the story, which is really good. And so just before we wrap, so the program that you're starting there again, say this, what's it called again?
It's bballers.ca. Nice. We're working on the website. You know, my sister is involved. She's one of our investors. It's a big project, and a lot's going into it. So we're taking our time and doing it properly. And it's in Richmond Hill. It's an introduction to basketball. It's an introduction to fitness, to teach life skills in a safe and inclusive place for young kids. And we're super excited about it.
I wish you both luck in that. Again, obviously with the whole story we talked about, and we could talk way more. Of course, we're skimming the top here when it comes to, you know, personal stories. But both of you being athletes, having young kids, having that experience and wanting to give back, I think is super important. And it takes people like you to offer experiences to be mentors to other people, right? One of the first questions I ask is like, who are some of your early mentors, right? And you know, you're both mentors, right? You're both there mentoring people and providing opportunity. And at some point, this is kind of weird to think about, but at some point, if it hasn't already happened, I should say, because I know, you know, you've both have probably been doing stuff for a long time before this programming, but someone is going to mention either of you as mentor, you know, it's like, oh, who are some of your mentors? And they all mention both of you. And I'm sure it's already happened, right? Okay, and so that's just the way we give back, right? And so I thank you both for taking the time to talk about your program, talk about your life, talk about what's going on. I always say this, you know, I've interviewed a few people who aren't outside of Manitoba now. And you'll always be a Manitoban, that's for sure, without question. You'll always be welcome here. You're now able to give back to another community, but you'll always be missed as well, because you know what, you know, having someone like you, you know, not be here is definitely, you know, we miss you, I guess is the best way to put it, but we're also very proud of you. So thanks for taking the time.
Well, thank you, Darcy, for hosting us and Basketball Manitoba and everyone that's impacted me. You know, I have this ritual and this prayer I do every day. And, you know, I always thank those who have impacted me in some way, shape or form. And that goes back to the roots and Manitoba and Winnipeg and all those people who have been involved in my life. So I'm truly grateful for everyone there, and I'll never forget.
Absolutely. Well, you're wearing the sweater, so this is good.
Thank you, Adam.
All right. Okay, you take care.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Please like, subscribe, follow, and share this series, and reach out to us with your comments on the show. Thanks again for joining us.